Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hello, this is Pete. I am one of the content producers here at Ethical Property Partners. As well as a podcast, we have our YouTube channel, and one thing that's been working brilliantly over there are our Sophisticated Saturdays. Now, this episode includes audio from a Sophisticated Saturday show where you'll hear about a deal that Frank has recently done. In the first part, you'll get all the numbers, so if you want to take part and work out how you'd do the deal, you can grab a calculator and make some notes before listening to the second part, where Frank will tell you exactly how he structured the deal in a sophisticated way. The third and final part is exclusive to you as a podcast listener, where Frank gets grilled by an expert investor and chats about the deal in more detail. So over to Frank.
Hey guys, Frank Flegg here from Ethical Property Partners. Welcome to a very special Sophisticated Saturday YouTube episode. On today's episode, I have got a sophisticated deal challenge for you. From not me, as you're used to, but from one of our master franchise area owners, Pauline Chalmers, who looks after all of the franchisees in England and Wales. And she is going to describe a vendor situation that she has come across and has transacted, has solved the vendor's problem. But as with all of our Sophisticated Saturday episodes, we're going to pause when she's described the vendor situation, you're going to try and solve the problem, and then she's going to describe how she's solved it and, in fact, how she's monetized the deal. So, without further ado, over to Pauline.
Hello, my name is Pauline Chalmers. I'm the Master Franchise Area Owner for England and Wales for EPP. And I want to share with you the background to one of the deals that I did a couple of years ago. This vendor had been on the market for 12 months. He'd been on the market for 380,000, had dropped the price, and had recently received an offer for 330,000, which he declined. This vendor's situation was really sad. He was a fireman and he'd been really badly hurt in a fire, then managed to put it out without any of the residents in the home being hurt. But he'd inhaled so much smoke and actually had internal heat damage that he'd been signed off sick from work for more than 12 months and had gone through a number of operations. So he was approaching retirement and now in poor health. And him and his wife had a property that they'd inherited from her father. So they were kind of accidental landlords. And this property was a major headache to them. There was four tenants in the property. It was a bit like an HMO, how they'd structured it. And as I say, it had been on the market for 12 months and they hadn't been able to sell it. And the offer they had recently wasn't palatable to them. This came to me from a leaflet that I delivered in the area. And it had gone to a builder that I'd been working with and built a really good relationship with. And this builder knew Roy and his wife and introduced me to them. So it was a great referral. And quite often we get referrals from existing clients or partners that we work with who understand what we do and how much we can help people in unique situations. So when I met Roy, they were fed up. The two of the tenants had stopped paying and they knew what they wanted, but they didn't want to let the property go because they'd inherited it, as I say, from her father. They really wanted to sell this property, but they just didn't want to let it go. It was important to them that they achieved the maximum they wanted for it. When I met the vendor, he took me around the property initially and then we had a coffee. And it was when we were having the coffee that he explained his personal situation. He was just starting to recover from all the operations that he'd had. They had a desire to pay off their existing mortgage, that he was approaching retirement and he was really hung up on being debt-free. So they wanted to achieve the maximum amount they could for this property, but they didn't need to achieve all of it all at once. They were quite happy to receive some of it on completion and some of it over time, which was great for me. So what I put together, the offer for them, really gave them what they wanted. And it gave them some cash to renovate their property. They were really hung up on doing the garden and putting a small extension at the back of the house. When I actually went to complete on the property, two of the tenants hadn't been paying and they refused to move out. Now, most property investors would run a mile at this sort of deal now because they knew that it could take months for the tenants to move. But I was quite happy to wait. I was committed and the offer that I'd made to them, they were really happy with. So I was committed to buying the property and I agreed to buy the property when they were ready. So they took the time, they went through the eviction process with the tenants. It took a number of months. And when they were ready, we completed on the property.
So we're going to pause there, guys. You've heard the vendor's situation. You understand why they're motivated. How would you solve this particular situation? If you were sat in front of this guy and he's told you the story about being a fireman and how he's been injured and why they want to sell, why they've declined the offer at 3:30, what would you actually do? So we're going to pause now, grab a pen and paper, work it out for yourself, because unless you're actually able to work these out, when you're sat in front of a real live vendor, you're going to freeze. You're not going to be able to solve their problem, and you're not going to be able to do these deals. So work it out now, and then we'll pass over to Pauline to tell you how she solved this vendor's problem and monetized the deal.
This is the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. To see more about our Sophisticated Saturdays, just search YouTube for Ethical Property Partners.
This property was not only a no money down, but there was a cashback attached to it. So there was lending on the property, which enabled me to buy it, and they also received a payment over time. So to give you some of the numbers, they'd received an offer of £330,000, which they'd declined. I've paid them, in total, my offer was £320,000. So you think, well, why would they accept £10,000 less than a previous offer? They got to know me. We'd had a coffee. I really empathised with their situation. And I solved their problem in a way that actually really worked for them. So on completion, they received £250,000, £245,000 it was. There was £11,000 cash back on the deal, and they've agreed to take a balance over time, absolutely interest-free. So we created a win for them and a win for me. That's all about the vendor. And we focus on the vendor initially, but now about the property. So it was a four-bedroom HMO. I then renovated the property, and I've converted it into a seven-bedroom, seven-en-suite. Now, I've had this property for nearly 4 years. And in that time frame, I've had two voids. The property's lovely. It's really high demand in an area where there's a lot of HMOs, but the property is well positioned, there's parking, etc. So two voids for a month each of each room over 4 months is not bad going on it. Voids is where there's no tenant in the property, so you're not receiving payment that particular month. So I found a lender who was happy to lend me £256,000 on this property, even though the vendor was only receiving £245,000. So the property was worth £320,000. That meant the difference between the £245,000 and the £256,000 is £11,000. I received £11,000 cash back on this deal. So just imagine that if you made cash back on deals like this, what that would bring into your business. You don't need lots and lots of capital to keep rinsing and repeating on this, doing lots of them again and again and again. This property makes every single month, the rental on it is £4,425. And after paying all costs, the net income, including the payment to the vendor that's paid over time, the net profit on the property is £1,900 a month. There is no money left in this transaction. I refinanced after the refurb to pull the rest of my money out, and it makes £1,900. And we created, with the EPP solution, I've got a really happy vendor that I still communicate with. We're friends on Facebook. They've got a really lovely little boy, and I've created a win for myself and a win for them. And that's what you can do with an EPP.
So, Pauline, thank you for joining us to critique that deal that you've just talked about, and for me to ask you and grill you on the questions that I think our audience would be asking to themselves. And the first one, which has actually popped up on the YouTube channel already, is why on earth would a vendor who's been offered £330,000 from someone else sell to you for £320,000? But it's not just that. It's actually sell to you for £320,000, but actually receive £245,000 now and the balance over a number of years. So why did this particular vendor do that, Pauline? Now, I know it's commonplace and I know you know it's commonplace, but for the guys listening, why?
It's a really valid question, actually. And it's as you say, it's straightforward for EPP and our partners. It's commonplace for us. But we do everything for a reason, and we build trust with our vendors we create a win-win with them. So I was absolutely not in any hurry to force them into decision, and that's part of it. So when I met them, I met the vendor initially at the house and had a look around the property, which isn't part of our standard process, but it was on the market. So I got to meet the vendor, which is unusual, isn't it? If you go to do a viewing normally, you meet the estate agent, but I didn't. I met the vendor because it was a personal introduction to him, and started from there, and really just took the opportunity to go for a coffee with him to find out about him and his family and what had happened, the accident and his recovery. And it was only really on the second meeting with him that I got close to saying what did they want and what did they need. And at that point, he was really comfortable. So it wasn't so much about the money. This was a property where it was her father. They'd inherited it from her father who'd moved overseas. They'd become accidental landlords. And they really just wanted someone they could trust to manage the process, to take away the headache that they had with this property. So I think it was a combination of not pushing them to make a decision on it and spending time to understand their situation whilst empathising with that and finding a solution for them that worked. Because as it transpired, they didn't need all the money at once. That's what created the win-win with them.
It's so interesting. That question is such a logical question. Why would someone sell for £10,000 less and for much less in their pocket on day one? Because also they've got to trust you, haven't they? They've got to trust you that extra money, the extra, £75,000 is actually going to come over the next 10 years. But many of our vendors aren't driven by money. They need some money, but they're actually driven by emotion. If they were unemotional, they'd be selling on the open market in a conventional manner. And so I think that's one of the biggest reasons EPP does so well and we do deals that no one else are able to do. It's because we focus on the person and how they feel while solving their property problems as well. So thank you, Pauline, for explaining that. So we talk about layers of icing in EPP a lot, and I really want to drill down into this property. So you quite flippantly said in the video it was a 4-bed HMO and I turned it into a 7-bed HMO. Now, what you didn't say in the video is there's a couple of layers of icing here, or at least one really juicy layer of icing. So would you just talk us through a couple of questions, if I may? The first is, why did you buy it with 4 tenants in situ? You know, wouldn't it have been better to buy it with vacant possession? And secondly, how did you go about turning it into a 7-bed HMO? How long did it take? How much money did it cost you whilst playing chess? Now, you and I have had a recent conversation about turning part of the property into a service accommodation holiday let. You actually put the foundation in place, not the literal foundation, but the legal paperwork that you needed to do so in place right at the start when you were buying this property. So just, will you just talk us through some of those details that you didn't cover in the YouTube video?
Yeah, sure. So it was a 4-bedroom house in effect, but very large house. It had 3 reception rooms downstairs, which were underutilized, and it was very unusual. It didn't look like any other house in the street. So it worked really well to convert it from a location perspective. It's near the train station. You can get a train to London directly. You can go to the surrounding areas very, very easily from the location. The original plan was to buy it with the tenants in situ, but then the tenants stopped paying. So 2 of them left, and the property needed a refurb. So what I did with the vendor was agreed that we would wait until the tenants moved out and then I would purchase it. As it was, the tenants did move out and I purchased it within the time scale. But part of the evaluation process is to work out what to do with the property, because there were a number of options. I looked at whether I should title split it into 2 separate houses, even two fairly large houses, or create 3 flats or even 7 flats. Would that have been possible? Or equally, not make it into a 7-bed, but a 10, 12, 15-bed house. The rooms are really large. You know, the ceilings are 2.6 metres high. Most of the rooms are 15, 16 square metres in size, they lend themselves really well to put an ensuite and be way above the requirements for a double room. So as part of, you know, talk about the icing, what, as we always do, we always look at the vendor and focus on the vendor and the vendor situation and how we help them win in their goals with this property, in their what they want to achieve from it. And then secondly, we look at the property and say, what should I do with it? So I did all those evaluations, did costings on splitting it into two, splitting it into flats. One of the hardest things with flats, as you know, is soundproofing. But because the ceilings are so high, I could have reduced the head height in the ceiling and created all the soundproofing there. And my preference was white collar rather than LHA housing for that area. So I did all that work. And the loft space had already been converted, but very poorly insulated. There was already a full set of stairs going up to the loft space, but it wasn't used. I mean, it was freezing in the winter and boiling in the summer. So that became part of the refurb of the house to create a separate area in the loft space, which actually is more like a little, even more than a studio apartment up there. So that's bedroom 7, but it's a great space. So layers of icing. So that was all the evaluation process. And obviously, 7 bedrooms, lovely. You know, they've been well refurbished and they've all got their own en suites. So yeah, so that was the kind of the evaluation process. And then there's a garage. There's a single story garage at the bottom of the garden with road access to it, which I knew I needed to create some off-road parking for this property. And there was only next to this garage some area that you could bump up on. So I had the idea originally of flattening the garage at the back of the house and creating some parking, because it obviously 7 beds, these are working professionals. Although it's near a train station, some of them did and will have cars. But again, it's part of that evaluation process. What was the best opportunity with that? What might be icing on the cake? So on purchasing, I title split it. I separated the garage from the house. The financing on it was exactly the same. It made no difference to the value whatsoever. But it was sitting there then to be developed at a future date. So that is icing. There's a demand for single rooms or studio apartments, as you know, because of what I've just said. This property I've had for 4 years, and I've had minimal voids on it, apart from right at the start of March 2020 when we had the pandemic. So then I had a couple of voids just due to circumstances, people losing their jobs and moving home. But generally speaking, it doesn't have any voids. It's in really high demand. Even though there's a lot of HMOs in the area, the quality of the refurb is high. You know, we've got a weekly cleaner that comes in. There's a gardener that comes in. So it's well maintained as well. So it just helps to maintain that rental demand for it. So the final ice in the cake to kind of finish the story is this garage at the bottom of the garden, which can be developed out into a studio accommodation, probably for some sort of maybe serviced accommodation or even a one-bedroom flat that could be sold, because it's on its own title.
And that's the beauty of planning ahead, Paul, isn't it? The forethought to split the title and just have that garage and bit of parking on its own title, no mortgage on it at all, didn't affect the value of the property. So you still got the same lending on the property. It's a fantastic way of doing it. So well done. It reminds me of the four pillars, actually. And we've spoken about this on the podcast before, but it's so important, guys, to be mindful of these right from the start. And I can remember walking around that property with you, Pauline, and us just like brainstorming the possibilities. I can remember us thinking that we could keep it as a 4-bed HMO, not do very much to it at all and just continue to let it out. Then we looked at, you know, extending it sideways, backwards. We looked at doing that garage conversion there and then up front. You know, you've got all the trades on site, you could do it, but we didn't know the demand in the area. So it seemed unnecessarily risky to do that. Whereas you can do it now. COVID's helped quite a lot because We now know the demand for service accommodation is really high. So the four pillars to remind you guys is the sales and marketing. And most people think that that's the biggest part. Most people think that that's all they need to be more successful in their property business. And that's finding the deals, finding the vendors. But it's not. It's 25% of it. The second 25% is And that's what you did, Pauline. You identified this guy from... How did you find him out of interest? How did he come to know of you?
The property was in the market. I had kind of disregarded it. It wasn't something I was looking to buy, that type of property. But I generally market via leafleting. Mm. And one of my leaflets had gone to a builder who had extended his house, built another house next door, which he'd sold, but the sale was going really slowly. So he contacted me. As it was, I helped him facilitate the sale going through much more quickly. But it built a good relationship with him, and he knew the vendor.
So he referred you to the vendor. That's good. And that's because you helped him and didn't charge him any money, etc. That's brilliant. Yeah. Fantastic. So you were referred to the vendor, and you obviously built up the rapport, etc. From the vendor. What was the property on the market for? You said it was on the market. What was it being
advertised? It'd been on a little bit higher, but when I came to them, it was on for 350.
So they were wanting 350, and you looked at that as a conventional purchase and thought, oh, that doesn't work. So you discounted it. But of course, once you'd begun your negotiation and your sales process, you realized that they were motivated and willing to accept more. So then you go on to the second pillar, guys, which is your finance and legals pillar. So you sorted out specialist finance for this property that would enable you to do the purchase with the balance paid over time, which is fantastic. You obviously got it through legals. Took quite a long time because of the arrears on the current tenants. And you, I think, did you support the vendor in evicting them as well? Were you helping them with that? Yeah. I remember. And then you get onto the third pillar, which is the actual works and the refurbishment. So you, coming back to the flippant, you know, I just turned it into a 7-bed HMO from a 4-bed. How long did that take you, and what did it cost?
It took longer than I planned, and it cost more than I wanted it to.
Well, there's a surprise. If anyone who's ever done a refurb, that's par for the course. Yeah,
it was planned to be done in about 4.5 months. It took 9 in the end. I had a change of project manager halfway through. It wasn't working, and the budget on it was 90k. All in, it came in quite a bit more than that, but I need to think of the numbers. I included in, when I was doing all my costings on it, it wasn't just cost, you know, the repayments to the vendor had started at that point in time. So I had cash outlay. So I think it ended up about 140,000 cash out in total, including everything. You know, I like numbers. So I included all the utilities and the repayments to the vendor at that point in time. So we came in about 140.
And what kind of appreciation, what was your... Obviously, GDV when you purchased it was 350, something like that, 330. If someone else had offered 330, I guess we can safely say 330. What was it worth by the time you'd finished your works?
The reval on it was 500.
So it's interesting, isn't it? You hadn't actually added a lot of value, but you've created a brilliant deal. So with it being worth 500 and you could then refinance, did you get all of your money back out? Yeah, you did.
Yep.
You got... all plus 11 grand back out. So, and this is the thing people sometimes miss. It's like, well, there's not enough in it to do a refurb. Well, of course there is, if you get all your money back out, because what does this make you a month now?
The net profit after paying the vendor, the balance that was due to them over time, is £1,900 a month, £1,900 net every month.
For you, after you've paid them their share. And so that, of course, in the future, at the end of the payments will jump up. What do you pay them a month?
625.
So you pay them 625 a month. So that'll actually jump up to £2,500 a month.
Mm.
But in the interim, you're making £1,900 a month on a deal that you've left no money in. That's what's fantastic about this deal, in my opinion. And Pauline, I'm just grateful for you agreeing to share it with the world. Thank you for that, and also for coming on and doing this extra session where I could ask you the questions that I think the audience will be wanting to ask you themselves. Thank you.
No problem. My pleasure.
We will see you soon on the podcast, I'm sure. Thanks, Pauline. Take care.
Thank you.
That was the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast from Ethical Property Partners. Use your podcast app to follow or subscribe so you never miss an episode.